This is Intersection. I'm Matthew Petty. Today we're talking about TSA. What's changed at the agency in the 12 months since the suicide of TSA officer Rob Henry at Orlando International Airport? Last week we convened a discussion with some of the key individuals from WMFE's investigation, TSA in Turmoil, and we recorded those conversations live in front of an audience at the Orlando Public Library's Melrose Centre. This is the first of those two panel discussions. Thank you all for joining us for this live taping of Intersection at the Orlando Public Library's Melrose Centre. I'm Matthew Petty. February marks 1 year since the death of Transportation Security Administration officer Robert Henry at the Orlando International Airport. And in the aftermath of Rob Henry's suicide, questions were raised, including about the workplace culture at TSA. An investigation by WMFE's Abe Abariah and Daniel Pryor uncovered allegations of abuse and retaliation at TSA and followed up on some of the changes in culture that Rob's death has prompted at TSA. So today we're going to take a look back at the last 12 months and ask what's changed and what comes next. First, we'll hear from a panel of journalists who covered the story, and then we'll talk to some of Rob's friends and colleagues, and there will be some time for questions as well. On stage with me, Danielle Pryor. She's a reporter with WMFE. Thank you, Danielle. Also joined by Abe Abariah, health reporter with WMFE. Thanks, Abe.
Thank you.
Asher Wildman is a reporter with Spectrum News 13. Thank you, Asher. And Isaac Babcock, journalist and photographer. Isaac, thank you as well. I want to start with you, Danielle, and just walk us back through the events of that day back in February last year.
When I first got to the airport, it was a little chaotic. People weren't sure what had happened. It sounded like maybe a gun or some sort of weapon had gone off, so they rushed through the gates. And it wasn't until I think people looked around that they realized that somebody had jumped. And so I think people were just kind of in shock, passengers, but also TSA workers. And it was just a very emotional. I spent probably 5 or 6 hours there talking to people after it happened. And people responded in different ways, but I saw some very touching things. At one point, there was a TSA worker who went and just sort of sat right kind of where the fountain is, where Rob would have actually fallen, and just kind of was looking through pictures of Rob on his Facebook page. And I don't know who that TSA worker was. I didn't ask because I didn't want to interrupt kind of his reflection and his moment. But yeah, it was just a very emotional thing, obviously, that a young man had taken his life during the government shutdown. Nobody really knew why, in the middle of a very, very busy day.
Asher, in the follow-up to Rob's death, you did some work in reporting and broke the story essentially about the allegations of bullying. Just kind of walk us through that.
When everything happened, I was trying to find, being from Central Florida, I was trying to find somebody who might know somebody within TSA, and I was trying to figure out what exactly had happened. You know, we were told that day that the belief was Robert Henry had jumped because he had a toothache and that he was suffering from depression from not getting his paycheck, because at the time the government was on this government shutdown. I literally connected with a former high school friend who then connected me to somebody else who then said, I had to find a girl, a woman by the name of Felisa. And that wasn't even the right name. It wasn't the right spelling. So I couldn't even figure out who this person was. I went to the airport the next day to try to ask around as to who is this Felisa, was the name I had. And it was spelt like PH. It was totally not right. But finally, I think I finally got a hold of somebody at the Starbucks that's right there off the terminal. And they gave me the name of Brenda Shearer. And they said, you need to find Brenda Shearer. And I did the best I could. I looked her up on the white pages. She was unlisted. I went to her address. In fact, the first time I went to her house, I left a note and a business card on her front door just saying, can I connect with you? And then I waited 2 to 3 days, and I came back to her property, and she happened to be home. And that's when I found out, talking to Brenda, a little bit more about Robert, who, you know, was living with her. She in a way was kind of his secondary mother, if you will. You could tell that there was a very deep relationship there between Robert and Brenda. And when I learned more about Robert and his life, it just didn't add up that a guy with a toothache would take his life. So once I hooked up with Brenda, I eventually was able to find Felicita, was her correct name, when I finally figured out who Felisa was, or Felisa. And then from there, it just kind of was like a spider web, if you will, of just spreading out of other people trying to talk and come forward. But without Brenda kind of having that conversation with her about who Robert was and kind of what his life was like, I would have never pursued more to figure out what was really going on.
Was it immediately evident to you as you started that first day of reporting that this story went that deep?
I really think so. I mean, you know, Brenda told me that that Robert lived in this side house adjacent to her property. His car was paid off. His bills at the time was, I think he had to contribute to the internet bill, and he had to pay his electric bill, but he was rent-free otherwise. And it just, a lot of it wasn't making sense that he had a good relationship with her children. He played video games with them. She would drop them off at the theme parks. He did not have, it did not sound like he had monetary problems. So when I was putting this all together with Brenda, I just figured out that there's something more here. I mean, it just doesn't make sense that the guy that has this great at-home lifestyle with the Shears and is living rent-free, the fact that there was a government shutdown, he didn't need the money, his car was fully paid off. And the toothache, I think my conversation with Brenda was that, yeah, it kind of bugged him, but it wasn't anything that was, like, really concerning to her.
Abe, kind of flash forward a couple of months, and we're reporting a story on WMFE, and then we start getting calls and people literally walking into the station saying, hey, I've got more to tell. Walk us through that.
Yeah, we literally had people who came to the station to say, like, hey, listen, there's a lot going on at Orlando International Airport that isn't being, you know, that the full story isn't being told. And we kind of took the approach that once we started getting a lot of these, having these contacts with people and getting some of the documents and doing initial interviews, that we had the thought that it might be a good idea to have a way for TSA agents to contact us. So that's when we built out the survey to give people a way to reach out to us and you know, connect with us that way. And we did get TSA agents mostly, predominantly, and they were from across the country. It was pretty surprising. It wasn't a huge number, but it was a surprising amount when you consider how much depth a lot of the people were willing to give us. And some people were uploading documents, and you know, we were able to, through that, find people who in other parts of the country had also had issues where, you know, they had attempted suicide and basically said that, you know, the working conditions at TSA were a huge factor in that. And so it kind of lent a lot more credibility to the idea that it's, you know, this isn't just something that, you know, wasn't, that this isn't just something that was happening at TSA in Orlando, that there's something a bit broader going on within, you know, an organization that's extremely large and has a very important mission to, you know, keep everyone safe when they're flying.
Isaac, I want to bring you into this conversation. You spent some time taking portraits of TSA officers, and there's more to it than just pointing your camera and taking that photo, right?
Right.
And I know we have some photos we're going to be able to show as well up on the screen too.
We do have a slideshow.
Yeah, so if you could just sort of talk us through that process, how did you get interview subjects to open up and, you know, get the photo that you needed?
Well, there is some irony with what Abe and Danielle have spoken about so far, people being willing to come forward, because once you're in that situation where you're talking to them in about very personal subjects, you need them to be comfortable. You need them to open up. This is something that they have had to either escape or they're still fighting it now. And say, for example, with Dave Platt, who's up there with his dog, Tippy, and I believe that he named his dog Tippy because he has boats, he loves going fishing, and maybe that dog doesn't have its sea legs yet, but that dog helped him open up, because everything else up until we were talking about his dog and what he does to escape mentally from what he was doing, it was short sentences. It was very brief. It was like he was keeping himself locked down. Once he could talk about what he did to escape from this, that's when we started to really see him as a person instead of somebody that's trying to escape from what he's had to deal with the TSA. You talk about Abe with the PTSD, with EMTs, firefighters, paramedics, and that's the kind of thing that it seems like that he's dealing with now. Dave was a bomb tech in the military, and so this is a guy that's used to very high-stress situations. Like if you've ever seen the Hurt Locker, that kind of a situation where the tension involved in it, and yet this got to him. The stress from the TSA got to him. So that tells you something about his situation. But Joe DiNadio, who will be on the next panel, I believe, he he's somebody that has physically escaped this. TSA, it was so tough for him, he developed an anxiety disorder while he was working there. TSA, he said, made it worse. He got into a physical altercation at one point with his boss, and everything seemed to spiral downhill from there. This is his place out in near Ocala, Marion County. He's in Marion County as a firefighter now. That's his new job. And it's an irony about what you were talking about, Abe, that the first responders that have PTSD, this is what he does so that he won't have PTSD, as he's a first responder now. Mm. He's escaping the TSA physically, mentally, but he's looking out on the lake, and this is where he goes every time he comes home. He just sits there and he thinks. And you can tell he's very comfortable with being there. And
I find it interesting that you're kind of trying to find somebody in their sort of quiet place, in their moment of zen, so right. to speak, right?
Right.
To get that photograph.
Exactly. And yeah. that's, well, Joe, thankfully, he was the most open to me right away. He was, mm-hmm. He's a warm, welcoming guy. He'll come out and shake your hand and your friends immediately.
Yeah.
But maybe it helped that he's here with his girlfriend, Vanessa. They're building a life out there on this lake. They have chickens. They have birds that come and visit them at their chain link fence. It's fantastic. But when we got to go over to the fire station where Joe showed me where he's a firefighter, it's like I got a whole different Joe. And you get to see who he is now, and he's really proud of himself. And this is something, of course, needless to say, he should be proud of. He's helping to save people. But he was doing that at the TSA. But maybe the TSA wasn't having his back, and he needed a place that did. And that's what firefighting is for him now. So that's the whole new Joe. And I think he's proud of himself. And not that he wasn't proud of himself there. But, yeah, you could tell that he was a different person when he was talking to me when he was there.
It sounds like from Isaac's description of going through that process of spending time with the folks and the story, taking portraits, it's kind of changed your impression of what the work that TSA agents do, Isaac, and I guess your appreciation for travel. I want to sort of put that question to you too, Asher. Has this story over the last 12 months sort of changed the way you approach travel as an individual?
I'm afraid to go through TSA after this. I'm just being serious. I, you know, there's a lot of people out there that I know are not happy with me. You know, I go to the food court. And, in fact, anytime I'm assigned a story at the airport, I go to the food court because there's about 50 of them on break every 15 minutes. And I hand out my card like a used car salesman. And I just say, hey, you want to talk? And so many times, I'm telling you, 99.9%, they take their card, they take my card, they throw it away because there is still that. They don't want to be seen with the media. There's still that fear of, I really believe that fear of retaliation if they do get caught talking to the media. But I can tell you, I definitely get a couple weird looks when I go to the airport. And, I hope that what we did wasn't in vain because I really hope we did bring the light what was happening over there. But at the same time, I can tell you that when I try to talk to even more people, that there's still just a fine line of, no, we're not going to go there.
Mm-hmm. Abe, what about you? Do you travel differently now?
I definitely, both times that we've had stories come out in recent times, I've had to go through MCO as a traveler, and both times I've you know, kind of handed my ID, and they
look
down and kind of give you a funny look, and you never know, like, if it's, like, I'm not going to say anything. I don't want to kind of jinx it, but yeah, it's kind of crazy. Like, you know, it definitely changed my perspective of it there, you know, in part because we, you know, when you're there and you're going through and you look over and the atrium's right there and you're like, God, it's just in your face. Like, it's so close to what, you know, the TSA agents are working through. It's like a constant reminder that something like that happened, that, you know, it was an event for most people that maybe they saw it on the news or had some kind of blip with it, or maybe they were traveling and had some inconvenience from it. But for those people that work there, I mean, that's just like a constant reminder. So that's definitely something that, you know, I think about when I go through. And, mm-hmm. you know, Asher, to your point about, you know, hopefully some of the stuff not being in vain, you know, TSA did, you know, have this contract coming out for suicide prevention training. Yeah. And it was like a $25,000 contract roughly. So, you know, at least there's something that's moving, and they did credit, you know, the reporting saying that we didn't realize how bad some of the problems were. So, you know, kind of knock on wood.
But in the report, they said there's no bullying.
No, yeah, there was no evidence.
No, no evidence
yeah,
of bullying.
Yeah, yeah, but you know, it did show that this was a national problem. So it's something that what was the terminology? It was going to be a national goal, a national focus for them coming through. So, anyhow.
Danielle, how has this story kind of changed your approach to travel and kind of the thoughts that go through your head when you see what those agents are doing, you know, if you happen to be at the airport?
I see them now almost as family and as friends. I've gotten to know so many of them, and they've shared so much of their lives with me. For me, I pass where Robert died every single time I go back and forth home to Detroit. So it intersects with my personal life at that point. It's not just my professional life. And I think for me that's the impact, is it's impacted me on a personal level. When he died that day, I thought it was so sad that I missed him, that I never got to know who he was, that I'm never going to get to meet him. And so in a way, this was my only way of getting to know who he was. And I think with suicide so often, we don't care about the person. We don't think the person's a person. We can't think that the person was ever happy or had friends or had a life or had dreams or anything like that. And I thought we owed Robert that. And we owe everybody who dies in that way that peace of mind for their family as well.
Mm-hmm. Asher, I know stories like this don't just report the story and then that's it, right? I mean, we're 12 months out almost, but you are still working this story, right? And broad strokes,
yeah.
There's some things that you're going to be reporting in the next sort of week or so.
Tease, tune in next week to News Channel 13. I have a couple of things. But, you know, one thing I can say here tonight is that, you know, the 2019 Federal Employment Survey for Work Satisfaction came out. This is a survey done by all federal government agencies and employees. There were 420 government agencies that are out there, and do you guys have any idea where TSA ranks out of 420?
I would go 420.
You're very close, 398th.
Yeah. Wow.
So 398 out of 420 is where, you know, they rank, and I think that speaks volumes of what the culture is like. And, I mean, there's some agencies I've never heard of. Quite frankly, there's some agencies I don't have an interest in ever working in. I think there was one about, well, that's another time. but the point is that out of 420, TSA was 398, and MCO was actually also near the bottom of all international airports across the country. And I think their approval rating was something like 40%, which was actually a decrease from the year before. So it's, I want to sit here and tell everybody things are getting better, but the employees are saying otherwise.
And it's been a bit of a learning curve, I'm sure, kind of learning about TSA, right? Because this is an agency which was formed not actually that long ago in the scheme of federal agencies. Abe, have you learned some surprising things about the way this agency operates?
Like I said, I had no idea, you know how the agency sort of came to be. I think there's definitely a lot of surprises when it comes to And maybe I'm guilty of this because, you know, when you think of TSA, I think, you know, 2 years ago, if you'd asked me, it's sort of, you know, the cliched late night, you know, comedy host, butt of the joke, you know, they took away my bottle of water kind of a thing. And it just sort of struck me that, you know, how many of these people are going through things that, you know, they're getting it from all ends. You know, they're dealing with a flying public that, you know, for the most part probably is not super thrilled and super happy with them. And then on the same time, they've got all the things that are going on in the background that, you know, if you're, you know, a TSA agent working in a line, you know, you kind of have to put on that public face and do the Disney thing and smile and wave and despite whatever's going on.
What questions, Isaac, do you still have about TSA after your involvement in this reporting project?
Well, I want to know what they can do to make these people feel like they have their back immediately, like there's a process moving forward. Because imagine being in that well that they're in right now where they don't know if they're going to come out. I'd like to know if somebody's going to show them there's real progress because, well, we spoke with Darren Soto a couple of weeks ago, and he was very matter-of-fact about what has to happen in Congress, what he wants to see happen. But some of that stuff, we don't know if it's going to happen. A lot of that stuff, we don't know if it's going to happen. And those are the kind of things that a TSA worker is going to work every day thinking about. It's mm-hmm. something we might think about every once in a while. Every day these people are thinking about, is this going to get better?
You know, to add to that, not everybody's part of the union. And there is a union president here locally. And I can just tell you, I'll say it on your show, that I've spoken to numerous people that don't trust their union president or their union. And that's a shame. And I even brought this up with the congressman. I'll give you a perfect example. Robert Henry's files, I've asked for them. I've been told for a year now by the union president that they're somewhere in a file cabinet. We're 1 year later, I still don't have those files. And this is from the union president. And when I spoke to her on the phone this week, she said to me that she believes that anything that's over a year would get thrown out. Now, how thick do you think Robert Henry's file is that that would have been thrown out? I'm sorry, but it's the truth. There are people at TSA that cannot trust their union president. And when you have, when you're told something like that, that is a red flag. When I try to interview people and I ask them, why won't you come forward? Their answer to me is, we're afraid we're going to lose our job. We're afraid we're going to get retaliated against. That is what the union is there for. It is to protect these people and to help them out. And if that many people are still afraid to come forward, that right there should tell you what you need to know.
Well, I want to thank the panel again, WMFE reporters Danielle Pryor and Abe Abariah, and News 13 reporter Asha Wildman, and journalist and photographer Isaac Babcock. And stay with us. We'll be back with our second panel in just a few minutes. And we'll bring you that second panel discussion when Intersection returns. This is Intersection. I'm Matthew Petty. Today we're talking about the Transportation Security Administration and what's changed at the agency in the 12 months since the suicide of TSA officer Rob Henry at Orlando International Airport. Last week, we convened a discussion with some of the key individuals from WMFE's investigation, TSA in Turmoil, and we recorded those conversations live in front of an audience at the Orlando Public Library's Melrose Centre. This is the second panel discussion. Welcome back to our live taping of Intersection at the Orlando Public Library's Melrose Centre. February marks 1 year since the suicide of Transportation Security Administration officer Robert Henry at Orlando International Airport. And in the aftermath of Rob Henry's death, WMFE investigated allegations of abuse and retaliation at TSA and also the changes made by TSA in the 12 months since to improve workplace culture and work to prevent suicide. And for this part of the show, we're going to hear from a mental health expert and friends and colleagues of Rob. We did reach out to lawmakers to join us for this discussion. Congressman Darren Soto was unable to make the event, but WMFE's Danielle Pryor and Isaac Babcock did speak to him at his office, and here's what he had to say.
What would you like to see, ideally speaking, when it comes to suicide prevention, you know, identifying but also making sure people are getting help and support that they need?
So there needs to be an environment of trust so that people feel comfortable going forward. And some of that, it's constant maintenance because every airport has different managers that create a different environment. So the oversight power is critical. You can't just fix it with a law, and you can't just fix it with funding. There is an oversight element that Congress has to provide and to advocate, really, along with AFGE and some of the local union that represents most of them and others. So there's an advocacy element. But then, yes, there's a funding part of it. And then there's direction that we could put either in law or by just having hearings like Homeland Security had a little bit after the time of Robert Henry's death. And we saw a lot of stress on families around the airport because of the shutdown, from air traffic controllers to professional safety specialists to our TSA and others. Those were real stories, real families being affected, and most Americans heard their cries, and eventually the American people rose up to have that shutdown stop. But I'll be following up over the next couple of weeks to see the progress of the functions at the management level of suicide prevention, and I'll also be working with the individual officers and their union to make sure that it continues to be up to snuff. But we don't need to have other shutdowns, because that contributes to it. When you're working in a high-pressure situation, long hours, and you're not getting paid, it's nearly impossible for people to keep strong mental health.
So, Darren Soto there. Joining me on stage, I want to introduce our guest for the second panel. We're joined by Stan Tucholsky. He's a TSO at Orlando International Airport. He was a supervisor and colleague of Rob at Dulles International Airport and MCO as well. Stan, thanks for coming in. Also joined by Brenda Scherer. She's a friend and former colleague of Rob. Thank you, Brenda.
Thank you.
Also with us is Ryan Gallick. He's with the Mental Hygiene Project. Ryan, thank you as well.
Thank you for having me.
And Joey DiNardio, former TSO at Orlando International Airport. He alleges he was fired for having generalized anxiety disorder. He's currently a firefighter in Marion County. Joey, thank you as well for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So, Brenda, we kind of got a sense in the previous panel from our reporters here of sort of the story that you had to tell about Rob. I want to ask you, in the last 12 months, what do you think about the progress that has or has not been made to fix some of the problems that contributed to Rob's death?
Well, since I'm not really at the airport anymore, I can only go by what people are telling me. Good and bad, some things are changing. Some things may be reverting back, unfortunately. Letting go of certain people, or technically moving them to other locations, has picked up a little bit there, made people feel a little bit better about their job. They've tended to band together, but anytime you have that many people picking on other people, there's always going to be one that they have to choose. Mm-hmm. And I don't see that stopping until you get rid of the ones that are doing it.
Stan Tucholsky, kind of thinking about what we heard from Congressman Soto just a moment or two ago, he's talking about some of the things he's trying to put through at the legislative level and obviously other lawmakers too. What kind of progress do you see having been made, especially when you think about things like suicide prevention and the like? Like, what's going on there, and is it moving fast enough?
Well, I don't know if it's moving fast enough. Obviously, you know, the situation raised it into the national awareness, and TSA had to respond, and they had to respond with realizing that they had nothing in place of that was significant and substantial enough to permeate through the workplace. So, you know, there is the national initiative that they have that we are slowly seeing roll out, but where it is exactly, I'm not sure at this point. There is a concern locally. You know, listening to Mr. Babcock talk about going up to where Rob jumped from and everything, for the longest time, any one of us officers, when we came to work, when we walked through that atrium, you just automatically look up and you recalled. And there was not a week that would go by where somebody would say, it took somebody to take their life to make things start to even begin to be looked at, not even change, but begin to be looked at as serious. Because for years, people at MCO in the TSA workforce voiced their concerns, but it didn't seem to go anywhere. As we approach the year mark, I had a lot of officers, coworkers ask me, well, what are we doing? You know, WMFE's having this thing, and but what are we doing? And I said, I haven't heard. And I tend to be one of those people that people say that kind of stuff. What are we going to do about this, Stan? What are we going to do? So I wrote an email to our acting federal security director and our acting assistant federal security director, Mr. Pete Garcia and Gregory Hocko. And I said, you know, as we approach, is there something that can be done? And I gave a couple different thoughts. Because traditionally when someone passes in the workforce, we have mourning bands that we can wear on our official shields for a duration of time. Within hours, much to his credit, Mr. Garcia called me personally and, you know, thanked me for my input and asked me to think more, and he gave me what he thought about. And so I followed that up with an email and everything. And today he called me again to tell me that they transformed the thought of wearing mourning bands, because that was what we thought we were going to do, and they've ordered ribbons that the workforce will be provided. And so instead of being more mourning, it'd be more commemorative, but also with a whole focus of local suicide awareness and prevention. So signage has gone up, He talked about presentations that he's developed to be at briefings and small group discussions, probably like tabletop discussions and signs of awareness and everything. So those are glimmers of hope, but you know, much more can be done and much more support. But the sad thing is Mr. Garcia will no longer be with us after the end of March because his acting temporary being there is going to end. And who knows what the future holds.
Joey, let me bring you into this conversation. How did you know Rob Henry?
I met Rob Henry when I was working in the training department at MCO. He was overnight shift. And at times I would work late. They would come in. What time do you guys come in? You sometimes come in early. Crazy, crazy hours.
6 o'clock.
And he, yeah. And I'd sometimes see him when I came in the morning. He had to do a few tests I had to help him with, some practical skills, just training related stuff. He seemed like a great guy. He really was. He was very standoffish, but he was a big teddy bear. He really was, and he was very reserved, though.
Mm-hmm. Now, you've shared in the course of Abe and Danielle's reporting over the last 12 months or so, you've kind of shared some of the issues that you had with anxiety and kind of working through those. It sounds like being a TSO is a pretty high-stress job. What's it like trying to do that job and be dealing with these other issues too?
I had a different experience than Rob did. I don't take well to bullying, and I address it. He kept it inside, which is not good. See, that's my problem sometimes. I don't know how to zip it. My situation was, I had been denied about, and this is no exaggeration, 37 promotions within just a couple years, I was just getting tossed around on detail assignments. I was being sent to school, rubbing elbows with fire chiefs, designing exercises, tactical response plans, but I was never good enough for the position. Until once I started addressing these situations, that's when things started getting a little hot for me, and that's when I really started feeling the heat.
Mm-hmm. Ryan Gallick, let me bring you into this conversation now. You were a firefighter, and now you're working in the kind of field of, workplace culture, trying to improve that culture and the like. Just sort of talk about what you do in terms of mental health and making people aware of the importance of good mental health for jobs like this or other jobs too.
Yeah, so I served in Central Florida for 18 years as a firefighter paramedic. And, you can imagine during that time I had responded to a lot of psychiatric calls, whether that be anxiety, depression, compassion fatigue, burnout, and all the way up to suicide. And, suicide is now the leading cause of death among first responders. I said, I can't be responsive to this. I'm going to get ahead of it. And so I decided at 36 years old, I was going to take a leap of faith. I was going to do an early retirement and launch a consulting company. Having said that, I have Ryan Gallick and Associates, where I work with first responding agencies, police, fire, and EMS, building safety programs. Obviously, a pillar of that is what I call mental hygiene. Mental hygiene. It's hygiene. Let's be proactive in this. Then I started, co-founded the Mental Hygiene Project, where we help organizations lead for positive mental health, create organizational resiliency, the ability to be able to withstand, recover, and grow from the challenges of life. And it really is making an impact. And so many people don't even know how to find a clinician. I mean, let's look at these TSA workers just in Orlando. Last year, there was 96 guns found at the Orlando International Airport. 96. That's one about every 4 days. They have a high-risk job. They're scanning, correct me if I'm wrong, at minimum 1,500 passengers an hour per checkpoint. Easy. That's a lot of passengers. And then we get upset when we take they take our bottle of water. I mean, they have such a high-risk job, and they are exposed to so many people. I want to know what kind of organizational resiliency processes and systems do they have in place. Now, they do have critical incident stress management. I don't want to jump ahead. That may be a question that you have. But that may be one of the root causes. And I'm not poking fun at CISM, critical incident stress management. I mean, it's back from the 70s and the 80s. And some organizations still use that critical incident stress management process. But it's a process, and it's typically for critical incidences. Today, what really works is peer-to-peer support, where we are all the gatekeeper of mental hygiene and normalizing the conversation around mental health.
I want to just bring the conversation back to Rob for a moment. And Brenda, let me turn to you. What is Rob's legacy as far as you're concerned?
I'm trying here, guys. Robert had the courage to do what none of us could do. He went public. And it hurts. But I don't know if anyone could have stopped him that morning. He knew what he had to do. As he said, he had lived his life. But he hoped that the managers that did this wouldn't have to suffer and at least be investigated and not be pushed aside and let it go under the carpet again. He was a kind and compassionate person that did not deserve this. I'm okay. He was a big man, but he was the most kind-hearted person in the universe, and they took advantage of him. They would move in places. They would put him places where he was no way going to be successful. And it wasn't just the managers or the supervisors or the leads. It was fellow TSOs. His fellow officers did the exact same thing to him every week. Someone would go report him, and that's what they do there. They pick on somebody, whoever it is that they're after, and then to make themselves look better, they report him. They go to the manager that they're buddies with, and they tell him, well, I saw him have his phone out, but he could be standing next to five other people with their phones out, and he would be the one written up. No one else. He never admitted to not doing anything wrong because we were all humans. Human beings make mistakes, and we were not treated as human beings there. So you would physically and emotionally have to put up with this issue, go about your job protecting the flying public, and do it to the best of your ability, knowing that they're out to get you. And that, to me, for the rest of the TSA people there, that's what I know the family wants. They don't want anything from anybody at TSA. They want it to get better there. They don't want people to have to go to work every day and worry what's going to happen to them that day.
Joey, let me kind of put that question to you in a slightly different form. What do you want to see happen, say, next 12 months or even 24 months out from here, sort of thinking about changes that obviously still need to happen at TSA?
First and foremost, I'd like to see the Title V rights go through. That's essential if you're going to change anything. The way things are right now, I don't know what the suicide prevention entails. I did read up on it a little bit. It was a training program and so on and so forth. However, anxiety currently right now is a disqualifying factor and will get you terminated. So how effective is a suicide prevention program? Also, who are going to be the ones that are going to be looking for these indicators? Is it going to be management, bullies? You know, is it just going to give a broader discretion to the problem? Is it going to create more of a problem? You know, we're really not fixing anything here. You know, it's pretty sad, and what breaks my heart is I know that a lot of people had a lot of hope with this investigation. Yeah. A lot of people were interviewed and with the investigation into Roberts. And when it came back as no bullying, that's it. All the wind was taken out of the sails. I think that people had hope. This was the most hope they had for change. And it fizzled out.
Stan, do you still hold out some hope that things will change for the better?
I think a lot is going to be determined locally as to who headquarters decides the next FSD will be. Mm-hmm. We have heard rumor as to who the new AFSD is going to be, but sketchy details, and it's rumor at this point. Mm-hmm. Maybe credible rumor, but it's going to be a change, but it also seems to be connected to some of the people of the past, and I don't want to go there because it's one of those moments where I got to protect myself.
Mm-hmm. Ryan, just in the last kind of few minutes or so here, sounds like there's still quite a bit of work to do for folks in TSA. How do you see this playing out?
I definitely think it goes way beyond TSA. The American Psychiatric Association states 1 in 5 people will be diagnosed with some form of mental illness in their lifetime. That is more than diabetes, that is more than cancer, and heart disease combined. That is huge. And if TSA doesn't think that they can get a workforce that does not have some form of mental injury, they're wrong. They're in denial. So I think that they need to create psychological empowerment. They need to create resiliency techniques and empower people to normalize the conversation around mental health. And how do you do that? Well, it begins by communicating and having safeguards and, you know, changing the way that we speak. You know, you'll never hear me say, I'll say it here one time, PTSD. I choose to say PTSI, post-traumatic stress injury. Let's look at it as an injury and show post-traumatic growth after post-traumatic stress. And that's where healthy coping mechanisms, the adaptability measures, and healthy resiliency, mindfulness techniques can get you out of that red, orange, and yellow zone and back into the green zone of being healthy. But let me also say this. We all have skin in the game when we talk about mental health. However, we don't all have mental hygiene practices. That's the problem.
And that was former firefighter, now mental health consultant, Ryan Gallick. We also heard from Brenda Scherer, Stan Tucholsky, and Joey DiNardio, friends and colleagues of Transportation Security Officer Rob Henry, who jumped to his death at Orlando International Airport last February. And that discussion was recorded in front of a live audience at the Orlando Public Library's Melrose Centre. We'll have a link to a video of both those panel discussions on our website, wmfe.org. And a note, we did reach out to representatives from the TSA and Orlando International Airport. They were unable to join the discussion. If you or anyone you know is contemplating suicide, contact the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, 800-273-8255. After the break, we'll talk to Deb Hanna, president of the union representing TSA officers in Orlando. We're back in a minute. This is Intersection. I'm Matthew Petty. In the 12 months since the death of Orlando TSA officer Robert Henry, what's changed in the workplace culture at the agency? I asked Deb Hanna. She's the president of the AFGE Local 556. That's the union representing TSA officers at Orlando International Airport.
I think that people are held more accountable. Upper management is held more accountable than they were in the past. Our acting federal security director from Boston, he's in the FSD from there, but he's with us right now temporarily.
Mm-hmm.
Him in the FSD from West Palm Beach, Pete Garcia, been there since April. And things have changed. There's not so much you're going to be punished for this the first time out. They use progressive discipline. They're stepping back a little bit. People are acting a little bit better. We interact better with one another, should I say.
What about specific things like training people to be aware of the warning signs of suicide, mental health support? Because those are some of the things that came to the forefront in the aftermath of Rob Henry's death. Do you think enough has been done to put some structures in place to help out folks who may be going through some strife or struggling or need the kind of support that Rob Henry maybe didn't get?
I think that there's not enough. I don't think that the officers are trained well enough to recognize. I mean, for me, I was a crisis intervention supervisor with teenagers for 25 years. So I recognize the signs and I talk to people and I'll pick up on some things. And I did not with Robert, which will haunt me until I die, probably. But then again, I didn't work with him very much. Mm-hmm. I think that what is in place is a good start. And I think that people are more open to watching out for one another.
Now, I want to ask you about some reporting that's come out in the last week or so. Asher Wildman with Spectrum News 13, I'm sure you know, one of the things he told us in our panel discussion last week was that in a 2019 Federal Employment Satisfaction Survey, TSA overall, they rank pretty far down the list in terms of employee satisfaction. Does that strike you as a problem system-wide?
That is across the country. And of course it's a problem. People come in sometimes to get their foot in the door as a federal employee, and they see what TSA is like, and then they want to get out. They'll go to Customs, Border Patrol, go to ICE, anywhere, you know, but TSA.
What do you think needs to change? Like, what can help in terms of giving people better job satisfaction, at least in Orlando?
I think that it has started to change. I mean, that was a 2019 survey. When everything had happened and the whole Robert Henry issue and a lot of other things that I can't get into. But I think we need Title V. We need to have what every other agency has, because right now we're still considered temporary after all this time. Mm-hmm. We are still a temporary agency. Title V gives us the bargaining rights and everything else that every other agency has, plus it'll give us a better pay system. And that's a lot of the issue. You have officers that have been there 15, 16, 17 years, and the new guys are coming in, and they're making close to what they're making or what we're making. I'll mm-hmm. put myself in that as well.
I also need to ask you, Deb Hanna, about some things that Asher Wildman also told us in our panel. He said that some TSA employees at Orlando International have told him that they don't trust their union or their union president, and he told us that they don't feel like the union has their back. What do you say to that?
Well, I think that maybe some of those officers are people that we couldn't help because of what had happened and what they've done. Officers sometimes don't want to take responsibility for their part and what the consequences are. If you don't come to work and you keep calling out, you're going to get fired. And there's nothing we can do. I mean, sometimes there's extenuating circumstances, mm-hmm. but not always. And I don't know the reasoning for not trusting us or not trusting me. Nobody's ever said that to me, and if they don't, I wish they would.
So do you feel like from, you know, your interactions with officers that you have their respect and you feel like they can trust you?
I believe so, and I know they can trust me, and I have a good team under me as well.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, our main job is to protect them, but there's some things that can't be done because TSA and Congress come in and say, you can't negotiate this, you can't do that. And when they've got all the power and we don't have a lot, we're kind of stuck.
Mm-hmm.
But we listen to their concerns and we try to do what we can.
Let me just ask you finally, Deb Hanna, a question I put to panelists at our event last week, and that is thinking back on Rob Henry and just reflecting on the last 12 months, what do you think his legacy has been and will be?
Well, I think that he made a point and he brought it to the attention that this is what happens when things are out of control. And Robert Henry is not the only one to have done this. There's quite a few TSA officers that commit suicide every year, but because they don't do it at their prospective airports, it's not put out there as a problem. And I think that our congressmen and our senators and HQ and the ones that run TSA, Pekoske especially, they need to open their eyes. They need to see what's going on, not sit behind a desk and make decisions for people when they have no clue as to what's going on at an airport.
Mm-hmm.
People don't trust them. They don't want to talk to them. When Pekoske came and Patty Cogswell came, people didn't really talk to them. But yet they made it sound like they had a wonderful interaction.
Mm-hmm.
I think they just, TSA has to open their eyes.
Deborah Hanna is the president of the AFGE Local 556. That's the union representing TSA workers at Orlando International Airport. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much. You have a wonderful day.
Special thanks to our panelists and to Jim Myers and his team at the Orlando Public Library's Melrose Centre. Thanks also to WMFE's Mac Doula, Juan Gualda, Jenny Babcock, Vieka Kleinover, Christine Hetzel, Steve Yasko, and our CEO and President, Erica Pulley-Hayes. Support for Intersection comes from our listeners and from Advent Health. Intersection's producer is Brendan Byrne. Our intern is Monica Seely. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Matthew Petty. You can follow me on Twitter @Matthew_Petty. Thanks for listening.